the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Star! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Cooks the defense as a kid. Deke shoots. Deke shoots. A spectacular rush from end to end. I mean, Kyle Quinlan.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Golden Knights get around the forecheck there. Long head man feed. Dorofeev tips on the right. Here comes Barbashev. Make that hurdle. Moving in. Throws it in front. Score! Tomas Hertl gets the puck on the right wing side, and he did not hesitate for a second. Fed a perfect diagonal pass to a breaking Brett Howden, and Howden beats goaltender Vanecek, and it's 3-0 Vegas in the first period in Vegas with 3:14 left.
We'll dive in. We'll have practice tomorrow in Utah. Try to get better. Try to improve on the things that we've been talking about, you know, since day one, and move forward. It's the only way you can go.
We got to find a way to weather the storm in, you know, energetic buildings. LA is their home opener. Same thing kind of happened. We're chasing the game far too much right now. I think there's a lot more areas that are not good enough, but that's definitely something that's not helping our case.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? The San Jose Sharks are not starting off games well. If we look back, let's just go to the game against Chicago. They started off at a 2-0 deficit. That is not going to be good. If we go back to the game against Winnipeg, they start off against the Jets with a 2-0 deficit. If we go to the game against the Avs, they start off with a 2-0 deficit. If we go to the game against the Ducks, they start off with a 1-0 deficit and then find their way back into the game, but that's falling behind time and time again. If we go to the game against the Kings, they fall behind once again, 3-0 in that game. And if we go to last night's game against the Golden Knights, they fall behind once again, 3-0 in that game. And consistent games in which you're falling behind early and often, and you're on the road for the vast majority of them, except for that one game against the Avs, it's not going to go well. Chasing a game is not going to treat you well when all is said and done. And right now, the Sharks are just in a constant position of chasing the game. I mean, if we look at the losses that they have had this year, you know, the game against St. Louis, the home opener, that was a collapse of sorts. They still picked up a point. The game against the Ducks, that was one where they had just fought a good game and couldn't find the offense. All accepted. You know, Dallas, that's a back and forth game. All accepted. And then it's just the most recent games, the Chicago and the Winnipeg and the Avs and the Anaheim and the Kings and the Knights. And now they're going to be looking to rectify things in a two-game back-to-back on Monday and Tuesday at Utah and then at the Kings. And then they'll be finishing up the month against the Blackhawks. I mean, the Sharks are in historic territory. This is the second straight year in which they have lost 9 straight to start the season. And while there are improvements that have been made on the roster compared to where they were a year ago, they are still just not good enough. And that was the most consistent theme that I saw throughout the game last night. If you just watch the relative skill level that was out there on the ice from Vegas and compared that to the skill level that was out there for the Sharks, it was staggering at times. If the Sharks attempt to skate between defenders with the puck, it was turned over. If Vegas attempted to skate between defenders with the puck, they would find zone entry and they would find space out along the wall and they would be able to quickly make the next pass to make a penetrating move towards the Sharks' net. And that is something the Sharks cannot do right now. If you watch Vegas and the way they move the puck from one end of the ice with the other, with consecutive passes, with finding the opposition, they were able to do so, not with relative ease, but just they would have a plan, they would act it, and they would be able to enter the zone in that way. If the Sharks would try and do that, good luck. And so when you look at the difference in skill level from one team to another, and yes, Vegas is expected to be a good team and their top-level talent is very, very high. But to me, when watching the game, it was beyond the top level talent. It was just looking at two teams, comparing them from one end to another, and just seeing that they consistently and overwhelmingly outdid the San Jose Sharks. And I know that the Sharks are in the midst of a rebuild. I am not denying that that is a stark reality of where the Sharks are. They have intentionally suppressed their payroll and gotten rid of big contracts so that when they are at a point when they can take that next step, they will be able to invest in the players. They will be able to invest into everyone that they want to so that they can build a contending team. But right now, looking at the early results, and while the immediate comeback to this is, well, they don't have Macklin Celebrini. Macklin Celebrini in one player, in my opinion, is not enough to make that much of a difference between a 0-for-9 start and not. Now, if they had had Macklin, might they have more than one win right now? Yeah, of course, that's completely possible. I'm not saying that it isn't. But at the same time, it's not like it's going to make them that much of a more consistent and or better team than what they are right now. The San Jose Sharks are sitting at the bottom of the league, 0-7-2. If you look at the rest of the division, Edmonton has 3 wins, Anaheim 3, Seattle 4, Vancouver 4, Calgary 5, LA 5, Vegas 6. Let's go look at what's been going on in the Central. Blackhawks, who beat the Sharks, not expected to be good. They've got 2 wins. Now the Predators, they've gotten rolling a little bit. They're up to 3 wins. 4 wins for the Avs in Utah. St. Louis, 5 wins. Minnesota, 5 wins. Dallas, 7. Winnipeg, 8. Well, let's get into the Metro. Before last night, Philly only had 1 win. Now they've got 2. Pittsburgh, Columbus, and the Islanders have 3. The Caps, the Canes, the Devils have 5. And then the Rangers are on top with 6. And then let's go into the Atlantic. Let's look at the bottom of that division. Montreal's got 3. We've got 4 wins for Detroit, Ottawa, Boston, Toronto, Buffalo. Tampa's got 5. Florida has 6. So the Sharks, being winless at this point, are aberrant compared to the rest of the NHL. And I'm not trying to pile on right now. I'm just trying to show you and illustrate that, you know, there is a big difference between what is populating the Sharks roster at 0 wins and then what there is at everyone else. And I know you can say, well, Ted, they were close against St. Louis. They were close against Anaheim. They were close against Dallas. They were close against Anaheim again. And yes, I recognize that. But the difference between being close and being on the right side of a result when all is said and done, I think, is beyond what one player in Macklin Celebrini can do. And I'm wondering right now if there are second guesses about the Sharks' plan this year to have such a low-powered roster, because there is cap space on this San Jose team. And one of the things we've heard consistently from Mike Grier is that they don't want to skip steps. They don't want to invest into players, ahead of schedule and get laden with big contracts that are preventing them from making the big moves that they want to do. But I will juxtapose that with what is going on right now and think that this is not doing anything good for anybody. Right now, young players are getting beaten down by what we are seeing out there on the ice, whether it's Daniil Gushin or, you know, Will Smith or whoever else it's going to be. It's tough right now. You're watching them try and make plays happen. And while it's good to get them used to the NHL level, I'm not against that in the slightest, it does just beat up on their psyche a little bit, and they're not being able to have the success that they otherwise would have. Now, one of the things that I consistently talk about with the Sharks, if you look at the way that young players came into the system, while you were able to watch Logan Couture and Tomas Hertl and Timo Meier come in and have success early in their careers, is that they were coming on to a team that was loaded with talent, where they were surrounded by high quality players that were making the right decisions around them. And yes, shocker, good teams have good performances. No one's going to be surprised by that, but you were putting them in a position to succeed. Right now, these young players are not in a position to succeed, and the offense isn't there. The defense isn't there. They're taking too many penalties. The power play has been able to find goals, but I wouldn't say that that's beyond the individual efforts of certain players. It's not like the power play itself is looking amazing. We are watching players have high-level performances and make up for that, and I'll give them credit for that any day of the week. But if you compare what the power play looked like in game number one versus where they are now, yeah, it's not the same. And so I don't know what the next step for Mike Grier is in this rebuild. I wonder, you know, if he's looking at the results right now and thinking that he might need to make a trade, because a culture of losing is something that you want to avoid at all costs. I think the difference between this year and the last 2 years is that the last 2 years, everybody knew what they were getting into. They knew that the roster was being torn down. They knew that there were players being moved, that there were players being traded, that there were guys that weren't going to be here for the near future. And then, you know, after the Tomáš Hertl trade, everybody said to themselves, okay, they can start building it back up. And I think people thought they would be in a similar position to where we see Chicago or Anaheim right now, where you're not good in any way, shape, or form. But I don't think that, you know, 2 or 3 wins out of your first 9 was something that people were going to be, you know, all that amazed by. That was going to be just, hey, the Sharks are still not a good team, but they are winning with greater consistency. You were hoping, and the storylines that we talked about very consistently in the preseason is that you bring in, you know, a Tyler Toffoli and a Barclay Goodrow to help you, you know, move beyond these big losing streaks. And the Sharks are one away from having another double-digit losing streak. And I know that, yes, there is a game or two with a point in there, but you're not getting wins. That's a streak of winless to start off a season. And you would hoped that you would be able to see these guys, the Goodies, the Toffolis, prevent the Sharks from, you know, a 3-0 game turning into a 7-3 or 8-3 defeat. Well, while they aren't giving up those 10-goal games, while they did back-to-back a year ago in games 10 and 11 to start off the season, they are still being soundly defeated. They have had these losses now at the hands of the Jets and the Kings of 8-3 and 7-3, where they've never really had a chance. And yes, the Sharks in last night's game had the ability down 3-1 on the power play to make up a little bit in that game and make it a 3-2 affair. But while that opportunity was there, I would ask all of you how many felt that that was going to be the narrative. And I don't think it's a lot of you. I was hopeful, of course. I'm always hopeful when I'm watching a game that the Sharks will be able to establish themselves, but the team has not given any evidence that they'll be able to do that out of a deficit. Yes, the 3-0 deficit against LA, they got themselves back into the game. They gave themselves a chance. And the Sharks last night, by making it 3-1 and getting that chance on the power play, they gave themselves a chance. But just as there is a difference between giving yourself a chance in a game and ending up on the right side of a result when all is said and done, there's a big difference between giving yourselves a chance to get back into a game and not being down 3-0 in the first place. And that's the hard part about watching all of this right now, is that the Sharks are consistently finding themselves in the hole. They're consistently finding themselves in multi-goal deficits. And that's a very difficult thing to get your way out of. And especially when you're on a team that is not supposed to be great this year, yeah, you got to be a front runner. You can have the occasional comeback. Last year, the Sharks had the great comeback against the Red Wings. That was a great game, one of the most fun we had all year. They had the comeback before that against the Devils. It was great. You love to see those comebacks. However, we juxtapose that with the harsh and stark reality of, hey, it's not just going to happen. It doesn't just happen overnight. And right now, the Sharks are consistently outgunned and outmanned in every single game. So I don't know. I mean, maybe a trade is on the horizon. Maybe Mike Greer is going to try and bring in more talent, because you don't want the losing to just set in. You don't want to be that which defines the San Jose Sharks, because we've talked about how that can, you know, really upset things with a team. I mean, we've looked at what's gone down with Buffalo in recent memory. We've looked at what's gone down with Ottawa in recent memory. Right now, we're watching Detroit, while they are not off to a bad start in any means. They're 4-4. That's 500 hockey. You know, they're trying to get back to the postseason. We look at where Anaheim has been, and, you know, they're 3-3-1 right now. That's not bad, but it's not great in any way, shape, or form. They're trying to fight their way back into it. And that's, you know, again, the Sharks are not there as of yet. I knew they were a year behind where Anaheim was in their rebuild, relatively speaking, but at the same time, I don't think any of us just expected it to be this bad again this year. You were hoping that these players were going to be able to be the stoppers, so that you would be able to get a win, so that a 3-game or 4-game losing streak wouldn't turn into something like this. But to come back to my original point, the Sharks are outgunned and out-talented on every single shift, and they're playing like it. There is a hesitance and a relative, not fear, but just, they know they're outgunned every time they're out there on the ice, and they're playing like it, in my opinion. And you need to figure out how to rectify that situation, whether it's bringing up players from the CUDA, whether it's shuffling the lines more, whether it's making changes. I don't know. I'm not saying I have the answer, but I'm saying you can't keep on doing the same thing game in and game out and expect to get a different result. I'm not putting that on Ryan Warsawski. He's not at fault for the talent that's out there on the ice. And I'm not blaming Mike Greer either, because I think he thought that, you know, these players would be able to give the Sharks more of an opportunity to turn this into a team that could have two or three wins right now, as opposed to where they are. And yes, I acknowledge the loss of Macklin Celebrini did make a difference in where the Sharks are right now. But again, he's a guy who's only a couple months after his 18th birthday. He's not going to be able to do it all every single night and be the reason that the Sharks are getting, you know, one, two, three wins at this point versus a 9-game losing streak to start the season. He might have one. He might be able to help the Sharks get one at this point, maybe in the game against Anaheim, maybe in the game against LA, maybe in the game against Dallas. I don't know. But it can't just be on the 18-year-old to be the huge difference maker. And yes, I know there was probably hope that Logan Couture could be back. He's not. So right now, the Sharks are just, they're outgunned. I mean, they are at a severe talent deficit, and guys like Tyler Toffoli and Barclay Goodrow, even though you've watched Tyler Toffoli perform at a high level so far to start this year, it's not been enough to be a stark difference from what we saw a year ago, and the Sharks are paying for it in terms of their results out there on the ice. You heard the term from Ryan Warsawski, embarrassing was used. I'm sure he's very upset. You know, the locker room emotions, not good right now. It's been a tough go for the San Jose Sharks. Let's take a look at some of the highlights of how the Sharks got in trouble in this game. Vegas struck early and often.
Tanner Pearson, the former LA King, now is in the offensive zone. Dumps one back behind the net. Here's William Karlsson in his first game. He feeds him, but they score. Tanner Pearson walked out to the slot and got the pass back from Wild Willie Karlsson and beats goaltender Vitek Vanacek. It's 1-0 Vegas as quickly as that.
Tanner Pearson with a goal, 1:57 in the game, assisted by Will Karlsson and Alexander Holtz. It's 1-0. Again, you're less than 2 minutes into the game. Then, less than 2 minutes later, Jack Eichel from Stone and Petrangelo.
Because right now, we've got the faceoff dropped in the Shark zone. 1-0, Vegas on top, fed near side. Eichel shoots, score! That's just a clean faceoff win. And then a pass across the rink diagonally to Eichel, who basically was in the Ovechkin office in the left circle, and he one-times one, and it gets by Vanacek, and it is 2-0, Vegas.
Things settled down at that point for a bit, but the Sharks were getting hammered, stuck in their own end, and getting outshot severely by Vegas. And then at 16:46 of the first, it was Brett Howden, assisted by Tomas Hertl.
Golden Knights get around the forecheck there. Long head man feed. Dorofeev tips on the right. Here comes Barbashev. Make that Hertl moving in. Throws it in front. Score! Tomas Hertl gets the puck on the right wing side, and he did not hesitate for a second. Fed a perfect diagonal pass to a breaking Brett Howden, and Howden beats goaltender Vanacek, and it's 3-0 Vegas in the first period in Vegas with 3:14 left.
Then the Sharks gave themselves a chance. Mikhail Granlund, who just keeps on putting the team on his shoulders, assisted from William Eklund and Mario Ferraro. He gets the Sharks back into it.
Ferraro skates in deep, exchanges with Toffoli. Ferraro's in deep back behind the goal line, behind the back pass in near side corner, and Eklund comes out with it. Behind the net, centering plate, Granlund shoots, score! Mikhail Granlund and William Eklund combining for a beautiful goal that gets the Sharks on the board. And Granlund continues his heroics as he extends his goal-scoring streak to three straight games. And Eklund sets him up at 10:13 of the second period. It's Vegas 3, the Sharks 1.
And this is where the game changed for good. The shorthanded goal where Vitek Vanacek sees a puck enter the zone, gets caught in no man land, coming out to try and contest it, unable to get it out of the danger zone. And then suddenly it is a 4-1 lead. Vegas reestablishes their three-goal buffer, and that would be all she wrote.
Flips it all the way down. Vanacek out to play it. Karlsson got there. Vanacek's way out of the net. Karlsson looking. Scores! A misread for Vanacek. It's a goal and an assist in the season debut for William Karlsson. The shorty has made it 4-1.
From there, the Sharks would get a goal from Luke Cunningham and Nico Sturm, but When all was said and done in this one, the Sharks fall by a final of 7-3. Let's get into some of that post-game reaction. Head coach Ryan Warsofsky asked about the difficulty with Vegas.
Yeah, they're a big team. They move with pucks quickly. Obviously fast team, it's a skilled team. We just didn't do a good enough job, you know, stopping the puck up so we can get numbers around it. That's probably the biggest thing.
And like I said, the skill level, the way that Vegas was able to move the puck, the way that they were able to get zone entry, the way that they were able to constantly win it back and keep the Sharks pinned in their own end, that is that skill disparity that I see when I look at the two teams. And I think you see it shift in, shift out, and that's going to take its toll, and it did on the Sharks. That's why they were behind 3-0. That's why they couldn't ever really get back into this game. That's why they ended up losing 7-3. It was not a good game for San Jose, but it's not like the tactics were wrong. It's not like Ryan Warsofsky isn't putting the team in a position to win. The Sharks are just not at the same level of where Vegas is right now. Mario Ferraro was asked about what the difference is in this season versus a year ago.
I don't know. That's hard to talk about right now. Obviously, it's been a tough start for us. I don't want to talk about last year. Last year is in the past, the last couple of years, whatever. This is a new year. Moving forward from that.
And I agree with him to an extent. It is a new season. It is a new team. Last year does not have a bearing on what is happening this year out there on the ice. However, when you look at the two seasons and you see the team is off to identical starts, that comparison has to be made. Now, I can make an argument that the team is playing better than they were a year ago. They are scoring more goals. They have given themselves a chance in more games, but I will also say that they have had some bad losses up to this point of the season. They have, you know, gotten hammered by Vegas and by Winnipeg at this point. And listen, Winnipeg is a very, very good team right now. They are off to a great start. Most points in the NHL at this point, so I don't think that should be discounted, that the Sharks getting beat by a good team should be some sort of great surprise. But at the same time, you are making comparisons about where they were this year versus where they were a year ago. And last year's narrative doesn't feed this year's narrative for the team in and of itself, but it does for fans. It does for pundits. It does for all of us out there that are not on the ice. We make comparisons. We look at what we saw in the past versus what we see now. And unfortunately, even if the Sharks are a better team than where they were a year ago, it's not yielding the desired results. And I think that's a tough reality to accept, that even if the Sharks are playing better, even if they have more talent out there, it is not enough for them to be considerably better than where they were a year ago. They are better across the board, but the results aren't better. And ultimately, this is a results-oriented business. Mario was asked about where the team is right now emotionally.
Right now, not good. Obviously not. I don't expect us to be emotionally good, but we're still professional athletes. We're still going to show up tomorrow and be ready to go again. But obviously this stinks.
And I have to imagine that everybody is looking at themselves collectively and trying to figure out, how did we get here again? And the only answer that I think you can come back to consistently is the Sharks just do not have the horses right now to find the wins consistently or wins at all. I know that that's hard to accept when you're 0-9, and I don't think the Sharks are as bad as an 0-9 team per se, but you know, you have to look at the standings. They don't lie. And yes, having Macklin Celebrini could have given you another win at this point, but that's not where they are. We can play the ifs game and the intangibles and the variables as long as we want, but that doesn't change the reality of where the Sharks are right now. They're in a bad place. They're not consistently finding the results that they want. And right now, you just have to wonder what's going to be the change. Are they going to bring up Shakir Mukhmadulin and see if he can do much on the defensive side of things? Are they going to bring up Luca Cagnoni to see if he can help spark the offense as a D-man? Are they going to bring up a Colin Graf? What are the next steps for San Jose to try and find more and better consistent results at the NHL level? Because right now, it's simply not working. All right, before we run out of time, I did want to give you a little bit of my interview with Nick Nolenberger that I need to finish up from yesterday, the voice of the Cuda. We just talked about, you know, things going really well for them to start off the season. And then Philip Bystedt, obviously tons of hype around him. Last year, you know, you finally got your first look at him, Noli, and you told me that you liked his mind, that he was bigger than advertised. Is it, I mean, obviously 7 points through 6 games. So is it living up to what you saw at the end of last year and maybe a little bit more so?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you look back at his numbers in the SHL last year, and really they weren't great. He didn't put up a ton of numbers, and I think that made people pause a little bit. Like, what's the offensive ceiling for this guy in the future? But he's come over, and he's really kind of assimilated himself to the North American game even better than he did back home in Sweden. It kind of fits him better because of his size and because of his skating ability and the way he thinks the game. And he even admitted that. He thinks his kind of skill set is better suited for the North American style. So that doesn't always happen because over in Europe, you've got more time to think, to make plays. But the way he processes the game, that's not his problem at all. So, you know, his ability to hold on to pucks is one of the things that sticks out to you probably the most. The way he enters the offensive zone and is able to just kind of bounce guys off of him and hold on to the puck and be able to read the play is really impressive for a young player. And yeah, the production, it's hard to look beyond it. He's got points in every game this year. He's got a 7-game point streak dating back to last season. You know, the record for the Barracuda for a consecutive games with a point is 10. That was set by Marcus Sorensen back in 2016-17. So to get to a 7-game
Your first year, I believe.
It was my first year, exactly. So to get to 7 points consecutively, I mean, that really hasn't happened very often in the franchise's history for a player to have this kind of run he has. He's been on. So, you know, Colin Graf is right behind him. He's got points in his first 6 games in the AHL. So, you know, there's tons of guys pulling the rope. But Bisted's been outstanding. The offensive punch that he has and what he's been able to do so far has been really, really exciting because the Sharks look at him, I think, in the future as, you know, a really reliable center iceman who has all those skill sets that come along usually with a Swedish player. They think the game really well. They've got those great hockey smarts. He usually can skate pretty well. But if he has that offense to his game as well that he's put on display, and there's no reason to think it can't translate because it's not kind of fluky. You know, it looks natural. It's coming to him because of the plays that he's making and the way that he reads the game. They've got something, I think, in my mind, at the next level and in the future. At the center ice position, and you've heard Mike Greer say it, you can't just go and trade for center icemen very often. You've got to draft and develop them. And Philip Bisted's, you know, near the top in terms of prospects because of the position he plays and the type of physical skills that he has, and it's been a great start for him.
And just as a quick one to finish, is John McCarthy having fun?
Yeah, it's funny. I said to Drew, Drew Romanda, Dan Rusinowski, Randy Hahn, they all came to the game yesterday, and Drew and Ruzy came down into the bowels of the arena, and I interviewed John before, and Drew had a couple words for him, and they chatted, and I said, man, John, when you guys come down, it's just like he's so much lighter, right? But I think it really has to do with the fact that this is a lot funner. I mean, winning is so it's contagious in terms of just the feeling. And yeah, he's having a lot more fun. And it's no disrespect to the teams that he had the last couple of years. But coaching only gets you so far, in my opinion. If you don't have the horses, it's just hard to win. You know, some teams can tread water for a certain period of time and win hockey games. But if you don't have the horses, it's just hard to be a competitive team night in and night out. And certainly this team has the horses. They've got depth at all three levels. You know, the defensive core was maybe the biggest question mark in my mind going into the year. And they've kind of erased any sort of early questions for me. You know, they've got guys that have really stepped up. Joey Keane is a guy who, he wasn't even on my radar before the season started. He's playing on a PTO. This guy has been awesome. He won a Calder Cup a couple of years ago with Ryan Warsawski. He was in the KHL the last 2 years. I mean, he has been outstanding as another option on the blue line. So, yeah, John McCarthy seems lighter. He's having more fun, and as he should be. He's got a great team, and him and his staff are doing a great job.
That was where I ended things with Nick Nolenberger. Again, the play-by-play voice of the Barracuda, who did a phenomenal job last night at NBC with my man, Alan Hoshida. If you'd like to hear the rest of it, check out yesterday's edition of the Build Up Game 9 as the Sharks get ready to take on Vegas. But of course, we are beyond that game now, and we are preparing for game number 10 for San Jose, the last game of this road trip in Utah on Monday night. 5:30 pregame right here on the Sharks Audio Network. 6 o'clock go time. The Sharks and Utah Hockey Club for the first time ever in the regular season. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.